Yes, make it, babe, by the door. Make it soft and make it low, my good gal will never know that you made me a pallet on your floor.
I need to pay bills. When is my tax refund coming?
I need to pay my taxes. What are my payment options?
I need to set up a payment plan. How do I do that?
I need answers to my tax questions. Where can I find them?
I need help with my taxes. Does the IRS offer free help?
I need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Need answers to your tax questions? Go to irs.gov.
Hi, this is Kenny.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT Pittsburgh. Lyme disease is the most prevalent tick-borne illness, with about 220,000 new cases occurring each year. Believe it or not, you can test negative for Lyme and still be infected. Many victims of Lyme report never seeing a bullseye rash, and it can be very difficult to diagnose because it mimics other illnesses, such as multiple sclerosis, ALS, and Alzheimer's. To learn more, go to www.lymediseaseassociation.org.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Welcome to our little experiment in freeform radio.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the Biden administration says it's making progress towards its goal to slow migration from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador by addressing the causes of that migration. The White House call to action foregrounds private sector investments as key to creating economic opportunity and to rooting out corruption in the region. And companies like Microsoft and PepsiCo have stepped up to do, well, what exactly? And how does this differ from the support for transnational corporations and their extractive, profit-driven policies that have misled U.S. involvement for decades? Azadeh Shashahani is legal and advocacy director at Project South. She'll join us to raise some questions about the U.S. government's claim that this time they're really bringing stability and security to northern Central America. Also on the show, Facebook would appear to be zero for four in tests of its ability to detect and reject ads containing blatant election-related misinformation. In this case, ahead of important elections in Brazil. The group Global Witness found what they're calling a pattern of the social media platform allowing ads on the site that violate the most basic of standards, including, for example, telling folks the wrong day to vote. At what point does, oops, but please believe we take all of this very seriously, stop being a plausible excuse? We'll talk with John Lloyd, senior advisor at Global Witness. That's coming up, but first a quick look back at some recent press. In the first part of a series of reports on Afghanistan, NPR host Steve Inskeep interviewed current Afghan defense minister Mohammad Yaqub Mujahid. As Bryce Green wrote for Fair.org, in his introduction, Inskeep referenced Yaqub's father, the former head of the Taliban, Mullah Muhammad Omar, as, quote, the leader who refused to turn over Osama bin Laden in 2001, a refusal that led to the U.S. attack, close quote. Well, the idea that the Taliban refused to turn over bin Laden and that this led to the U.S. attack is part of the commonly accepted chronology of the war, but it's a distortion of history. As Green reminds, before September 11th, 2001, the Taliban, who had a deeply contentious relationship with al-Qaeda, repeatedly signaled their willingness to work with the U.S. in bringing bin Laden to justice. A former Taliban foreign minister told Al Jazeera that they'd used unofficial channels for years to try and resolve the Osama issue, including a multinational tribunal. Proposals that the former CIA station chief in Pakistan has confirmed and acknowledged were rejected. George W. Bush flatly announced, quote, there are no negotiations, close quote, and began bombing. Any diplomatic options, including the Taliban's offer to give up bin Laden without proof of evidence of his involvement in the attacks, were dropped. But even if NPR's version were true, as Nathan Robinson and Noam Chomsky recently noted in Current Affairs, the U.S. invasion would still have been an unlawful act of aggression. If the Bush administration wanted to defend Americans from another terrorist attack, the authors wrote, they would have pursued the criminal network responsible for the original attack. NPR's historical framing is an attempt to paint the Taliban as ready to defend bin Laden to the death, and therefore complicit or at least supportive of the September 11th attacks. It's an inaccurate portrayal that serves to retroactively justify the U.S. assault on one of the poorest countries in the world. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. Listeners may remember Vice President Kamala Harris last summer on her first official international trip, telling Guatemalans who might consider migrating to the United States, do not come. While that language was criticized by some as tone deaf, the administration's message that they would be, as the New York Times put it, breaking a cycle of migration from Central America by investing in a region plagued by corruption, violence, and poverty was well and ingenuously received. The White House has since announced some $2 billion in private sector commitments to Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, part of what they've dubbed a call to action to engage the root causes of migration from the region by driving what officials repeatedly describe as an ecosystem of opportunity that will allow people of the region to build healthy lives at home. U.S. corporate news media never met a public-private partnership they didn't like, and they aren't so big on using critical history to shape foreign policy coverage. So if you want to hear challenging questions about this White House plan to bring peace and prosperity to northern Central America, they won't be the place to look. Our guest raises some of those questions in a recent piece co-authored for In These Times titled, "The White House's Plan to Stem Migration Protects Corporate Profits, Not People." Azadeh Shashahani is legal and advocacy director at Project South. She's also a past president of the National Lawyers Guild. She joins us now by phone from Atlanta. Welcome to Counterspin, Azadeh Shashahani.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, U.S. government involvement in northern Central America is a long history, violent on many levels, and I don't want to pretend we're addressing all of that right now. But if you don't put the Biden administration's call to action in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador in a historical context, it seems like you just can't see it clearly. So please talk us through a bit about what you and others see as primary points of concern about this plan and about the approach that it reflects.
So one of the primary concerns is the administration's lack of acknowledgement about the long history of U.S. intervention and facilitating coups against leftist presidents and democratically elected governments in support of U.S. corporate and business interests in the region, you know, from Guatemala to El Salvador to Honduras. And in Honduras, as recently as 2009, of course, we had a coup supported by the Obama administration toppling the democratically elected president, Manuel Zelaya. And so the U.S. obviously has had a very clear role in destabilizing the region, which has in turn led to forced migration. So, for example, the number of Honduran children crossing the border increased by more than 1,000% in 2014, so within 5 years of the coup. And as another example, immigration from Mexico has doubled since the U.S. signed the North American Free Trade Agreement in 1994, which has had the impact of undercutting a small business and crushing low-income workers, and has made migration, really forced migration, a matter of survival. And so, you know, the question that you really need to be asking is, what is driving this call to action? Is it actually supporting people, including indigenous communities? Obviously not. You know, what lies at the heart of this call to action, like previous U.S. government plans towards Central America, and I should say Latin America generally, is to preserve and promote corporate interests.
Well, concretely, for one thing, the U.S., we're told, has a commitment from this company, Sanmar, that we're told is going to create 4,000 jobs. You know, I think U.S. listeners understand that media are very interested in promises of job creation and much less interested in following up on how it plays out. But just using that as an example, what is there to think about there?
Right. So Sanmar is a U.S.-based apparel company. And so supposedly it's going to purchase more from Elcatex, which is a Honduras-based garment manufacturer that Sanmar partially owns. And so the Collective of Honduran Women, which is an organization of women who work in Honduras's garment sweatshops, has long denounced the low wages, long hours, and serious repetitive motion injuries that they suffer in Honduras's textile industry. And they actually submitted a petition to the Inter-American Commission, which has been admitted. The petition was submitted on behalf of 26 women who have suffered some serious injuries as a result of working in the garment factories, including three Elcatex workers with alleged permanent partial disabilities. And so, you know, these are issues of serious concern. And, you know, the issue is also lack of living wages and labor rights for the workers in the garment industry. And so the true beneficiary of Sanmar's increased purchasing from Elcatex, it is going to be Sanmar itself, because Sanmar is a partial owner of Elcatex and also, you know, one of the corporate elite, which is in a pattern we see repeatedly, that, you know, these business deals actually support the oligarchy in Northern Central America.
Well, this is obviously connected because anti-corruption and the idea that corruption is going to be rooted out is key to the call to action's promises here. There's an Engel list about, you know, you're going to get on this list if you've been involved in any sort of corruption. How do you see that playing out in practice in terms of these deals that are being made?
Right. Well, we're not really seeing actual accountability, you know, when the one exception being Honduras. So, you know, the 2009 coup was followed by 12 years of plundering and corruption. And so now the Honduran president, Xiomara Castro, and a new Congress have pledged to combat corruption and restore state institutions. So as a part of this, Honduras recently passed a new energy law, which, among other elements, is basically going to enable the government to renegotiate the contracts by which it purchases energy from private energy producers and set more reasonable rates. Because right after the 2009 coup, the government has started negotiating these contracts with the private sector that basically gave them huge profits. So it was estimated that the Honduras energy company, about 70% of its revenue was going to these private companies, whereas if it produced the energy itself, it would be a lot less money.
Right.
So, you know, you would think that this is something that the U.S. would be supporting, mm-hmm, based on the anti-corruption rhetoric at the root of the call to action and all the rest. But then we see the U.S. ambassador to Honduras criticizing the law on Twitter when it was introduced in the Honduran Congress, expressing worry about its effect on foreign investment, which again shows us that the U.S.'s true motives are corporate profit.
Right. Here you have an example of a state saying they want to use their state resources to benefit their own people. And you have the U.S. saying, well, you know, maybe that's not a good idea. It certainly should raise some questions. Well, how we think that migrants should be treated when they arrive in the U.S. is a separate, if deeply related, question to foreign policy that is affecting and has affected conditions in those home countries.
if the goal were to stem migration, and I'm not saying anything, frankly, about that as a goal in itself, but if the goal were to stem migration from northern Central America by making or helping to make lives safer and more livable there, what would that policy look like, including what would the U.S. stop doing if those were the real sincere goals?
I think as a first step, the White House would honestly contend with the bloody U.S. history of intervention in the region, including coups and the financing and backing of military regimes as they carried out widespread atrocities, you know, including in Guatemala and El Salvador. And the U.S. basically must break free of the banana republic mentality that sees the region as a source of natural resources and cheap labor and begin to respect the autonomy and self-determination of the peoples in the region. And so at the very least, the call to action should include a demand for U.S. corporations that operate in the region to pay living wages and respect labor rights, and to also respect the land and territorial rights of indigenous peoples, and to obey rather than to weaken relevant national laws. And so those would be some steps in the right direction.
Do you have any thoughts for journalists who are covering this set of issues in terms of things that they might be digging deeper into, or maybe patterns that they might avoid?
Sure. Well, stop taking things at face value, you know, especially calls to action and statements coming from the White House. You know, let's try to dig deeper to see what lies at the root of these calls to action. You know, what corporations does this benefit? What oligarchy or set of actors, you know, including people with enormous influence on politicians in Latin America? And look at the connections also, you know, between U.S. imperialism, corporate interest, and forces such as the School of Americas that is also based in Georgia, that for a long time has trained military forces and paramilitary forces in Latin America in tactics of torture and repression, and is open and running to this day. And so, you know, let's make the connections and hold the White House accountable for the hypocrisy when they're calling for, you know, democracy and human rights and the rule of law and anti-corruption initiatives. What does that actually mean when we see the actual opposite?
Absolutely. We've been speaking with Azadeh Shashahani. She's legal and advocacy director at Project South. They're online at projectsouth.org. And you can find her recent co-authored piece on the White House call to action on inthesetimes.org. Thank you so much, Azadeh Shashahani, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
And thank you so much for having me.
Social media platforms' role in shaping the sharing and fomenting of ideas that they purport to merely facilitate is a widely diagnosed concern. As with any kind of media criticism, it's important to look at broad patterns of societal impact and to track and unpack the distortions of these media in real time, as they have important real-time, real-world effects. Our next guest's recent work does both, really. Global Witness has been monitoring Facebook's failure to check outright disinformation in the run-up to elections in Brazil. John Lloyd is senior advisor at Global Witness. He joins us now by phone from London. Welcome to Counterspin, John Lloyd.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we talk about what you found, let me ask you why you chose to conduct the inquiry. What were the questions or concerns that drove your investigation into Facebook's role in Brazilian elections?
The reason that we chose Brazil is we've realized that the choices of the world's major tech companies have had a big impact online before and after high-stakes elections around the world. And all eyes are on Brazil this year. The reason being is that disinformation featured heavily in its 2018 election, and this year's election has already been marred by reports of widespread disinformation spread from the very top. The president, Bolsonaro, right now is already seeding doubt about the legitimacy of the election result, And that's leading to some fears in Brazil of a January 6th style stop the steal kind of coup attempt. In addition to that, we've also done some research into Facebook's ability to detect hate speech in other areas, which it's called priority countries, so Myanmar, Ethiopia, and Kenya. And what we found in those investigations was that, well, they didn't detect any of it, and really with no explanation. So we thought Brazil was a good opportunity to kind of see if they're putting their money where their mouth is, so to speak. They have highlighted it as a priority country
right.
when it comes to elections. And really, outside of the U.S. midterms, there's no bigger election this year.
Well, then tell us about the investigation itself. What did you do exactly, and what did it tell us?
Well, we sourced, firstly, 10 examples of election-related disinformation. Some of those were real-life examples, and others we had pulled from the Brazilian Electoral Authority's Counter Disinformation Program. So the election authority in Brazil had said that it had been working with social media companies in terms of helping identify and do a bit of debunking of some common election disinformation. So we chose examples that largely fell into two categories. Firstly, we did outright false election information. So that had like the wrong voting day, different things about how to vote. So for example, instructions on how to vote by mail, which is banned in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And then we had a second category of ads, which were content aimed to delegitimize the election result. So it was specifically about Brazil's voting machines, which they've used without incident since 1996. So we created those ads and then we set them up with an account which should have gone through their ad authorizations process. And that's where an account posting political, social issue or election-related content has to be verified. Really, we broke all the rules when it came to setting up that account. We set it up outside of Brazil. We used a non-Brazilian payment method. We posted ads while I was in Nairobi and then back here in London, which is not allowed. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm not Brazilian, so you need to be a Brazilian present ID. So there were lots of opportunities for Meta to detect that this was an authentic account. So then we created that account and then we submitted our examples of disinformation and all of them were accepted.
All of them. All of them, including the ones that said the wrong day on which you should vote.
Yes. And actually, initially, one of the ads that we submitted was rejected under Facebook's ads about social issues, elections, or politics policy. But just 6 days later, without any intervention from us, the ad was approved, again, without any explanation. So this bizarre sequence of decisions from Facebook really seriously calls into question the integrity of its content moderation systems, especially, I think, because that was another opportunity for some sort of additional review, both of the authenticity of our account. We weren't supposed to be allowed to post any political content. And then also to review the other ads that we posted. So it was quite confusing and quite concerning, too.
Absolutely, and disheartening. Well, you have stated, and you've also looked at Myanmar, Ethiopia, and Kenya, so this isn't just out of the blue. This is something that you chose to look at Brazil because there have been pre-existing problems and issues with this content moderation process. So, in other words, you would think that Facebook would be being extra vigilant at this point, having already been called out on this in the past.
Absolutely. And it's really part of a trend, which is Facebook will tout the ability of its content moderation systems to pick this stuff up. And we just bypass it so easily.
Right.
And one thing that I'll just say that it's important to note is the reason that we choose ads is because we can schedule those ads in the future and they still go through that same content moderation process. But nobody ever ends up actually seeing the content. So we can see that the ads go through the content moderation process and are approved, but then we take them down before the scheduled launch date of those ads. But as far as we know, the content moderation process is exactly the same for that organic content that people just post on Facebook and for ads as well. And if anything, for election-related content, it sounds like for ads it's even stricter.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that clarification. Well, you have stated that Facebook knows very well that its platform is used to spread election disinformation and undermine democracy around the world. I've not read the very latest simply shocked corporate response, but it doesn't matter because we judge them by their actions and not by their press releases. So what are you at Global Witness, and I know others as well, what are you calling for at this point? What needs to change from Facebook, and then maybe in terms of public understanding of or reckoning with Facebook?
Yeah, our asks of Facebook are really to take this seriously. It has to consider all of this, putting our safety as a priority, as a cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. And with the US midterms around the corner, they have to get it right, and right now. So our recommendations fall into two main categories. One is around resourcing, and the other is around transparency. So we want to make sure that they properly resource its content moderation and the ad account verification processes, just getting all of that up to scratch. But then on the transparency side, crucially, we need them to show their work. It's not enough to dazzle us with statistics that have no base of reference. We don't know what the common denominator is. So saying that they've removed 1,000 accounts or 100,000 accounts, I don't know if that's good or bad. Mm-hmm. Same with the amount of posts, because there's nothing to compare it to. But the one thing that we do know is that our content that we tested from my computer here in London all got through. So ultimately, it falls down to resourcing its content moderation capabilities and those integrity systems deployed on the platform globally as well, not just in countries that it thinks are more important.
Mm-hmm.
And then we want them to publish their risk assessments that they do for each country as well. We know that they're likely to have done one for Brazil. And really, we want to make sure that in languages that aren't English and in countries that aren't the United States, that they're actually doing what they say they're going to do. So perhaps that means some verified independent third-party auditing,
mm-hmm.
so that Meta can be held accountable for what they say they're doing and aren't just left to mark their own homework.
Right.
Then when it comes to people like me and you, there's a real opportunity to be a bit skeptical about what you're seeing online. And even things like the paid-for disclaimers, we weren't required to put one of them on any of our content because we bypassed the political ad authorization process. So even things like that, I think it's maybe doing a little bit of additional research if you're seeing something and it's shocking. Probably designed to be a bit shocking. So you want to verify that from trusted sources.
All right, then. Well, thank you very much. We've been speaking with John Lloyd. He's senior advisor at Global Witness. You can find their work online at globalwitness.org. Thank you so much, John Lloyd, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you for having me. Cheers.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. For more information, you can check out our website, fair.org. The show's engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Norman, your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Infections like polio, smallpox, and measles used to be as common as coronaviruses today. But now we have life-saving vaccines for those and other diseases. Sadly, too many children still go unvaccinated. Choosing to delay or refuse vaccine puts your child and other children at serious risk. So talk to your child's doctor today about vaccines. And for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. forever.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful when Mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. I wanted a better relationship with Dad, so I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Alateen. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to alanon.org.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Of a heartbreak, lost love, loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine. I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on the sea of tears, sea of a heartbreak. Heartbreak, lost love, loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine. How I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on the sea of tears, sea of a heartbreak.
Watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good. Well, I love a rainy night, such a beautiful sight. I love to feel the rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips, in the moonlight shadows. Showers wash all my cares away. I wake up to a sunny day, 'cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. Ooh, ooh, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. I love to hear the thunder, watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good. Well, I love a rainy night, it's such a beautiful sight. I love to feel the rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips, in the moonlight shadows. What's a song in this heart of mine? What's a smile on my face every time? 'Cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Ooh, ooh. Shadows wash all my cares away. I wake up to a sunny day, 'cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. Well, I love.
Beat when we walk down the street, I feel a trembling in my knees, and just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat. Well, I did a double take the day I met you. My heart turned to flip as I stood next to you. And I knew right there I never could forget you. For you are my every dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat. You came in. Turn my cloudy skies from gray to blue. You're my sunshine that comes up every morning. Yes, you are my every dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat.
One fine day as I was walking down the street, spied a beggar man with rags upon his feet. Took a penny from my pocket in his tin cup, I did drop it, and I heard him say as I made my retreat,
"May the bird of paradise fly up your nose, may an elephant caress you with his toes, may your wife be flagged with runners in her hose, may the bird of paradise fly up your nose."
My laundry man is really on his toes. Found the $100 bill among my clothes. When he called me, I came running, gave him back his dime for phoning. And I heard him saying as I turned to go,
"May the bird of paradise fly up your nose. May an elephant caress you with his toes. May your wife be flagged with runners in her hose. May the bird of paradise fly up your nose."
I was way behind one day to catch a train. The taxi driver said, "We'll make it just the same." I speak up, made it with us. And as he wrote out the ticket, I stood by politely waiting for my change. Man, a bird of paradise, fly up your nose. An elephant caress you with his toes. Yeah, you might be plagued with runners in her hose. Man, a bird of paradise, fly up your nose. Man, a bird of paradise, fly up your nose. An elephant caress you with his toes. Yeah, you might be plagued with runners in her hose.
Well, I pulled out of Pittsburgh, rolling down that eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up and she's a-running like I never before. There's a speed zone ahead with all right. I don't see a cop in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. I got me 10 forward gears on a Georgia overdrive. I'm taking little white pills and my eyes are open wide. I just passed a Jimmy in a white. I've been a-passing everything in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. But it seems like a month since I kissed my baby goodbye. I could have a lot of women, but I'm not like some of the guys. I could find one to hold me tight, but I could never make believe it's all right. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. ICC is a checking on down the line. Well, I'm a little overweight and my logbook's way behind. But nothing bothers me tonight. I can dodge all the scales all right. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. Well, my rig's a little old, but that don't mean she's slow. There's a flame from her stack and that smoke's a-blowing black as coal. My hometown's a-coming in sight. If you think I'm happy, you're right. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet and you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been." "Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." Up his case and he said, "I'll start this show," and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow, and he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss, and then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this. devil finished, Johnny said, well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, let your dog bite, no child, no. The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best there's ever been. He played, found a mountain, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. A chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, will you dog fight, no child, no.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. A woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. I've been working in this factory for now 15 years. All this time I watched my woman drowning in a pool of tears. And I've seen a lot of good folk die, had a lot of bills to pay. I'd give the shirt right off of my back if I had the guts to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. My woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. Well, that phone, he's a regular dog. The line boss, he's a fool. Got a brand new flat top haircut. Lord thinks he's cool. One of these days I'm gonna blow my top, and that sucker, he's gonna pay. Lord, I can't wait to see their faces when I get the nerve to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. A woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. Take this job and shove it.
DJs knows that I'm an outlaw. They'd never come to see me in this dive, where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive. Loudmouth in the corner's getting to me, talking about my earrings and my hair. I guess he ain't read the signs that say I've been to prison. Someone ought to warn him before I knock him off his chair. Cause my long hair just can't cover up my redneck. I've won every fight I've ever fought, and I don't need some turkey telling me that I ain't damn dough.
Chicken daddy bob.
'Cause I can sing all them songs about Texas. And I still do all the sad ones that I know. They tell me I look like Merle Haggard and sound a lot like David Allen Coe. And the barmaid in the last town that we played in knew the words to every song I'd wrote. She said, Jimmy Rabbit turned her on to my last album just about the time the jukebox broke. Yeah, Johnny Cash helped me get out of prison long before Rodriguez stole that goat. I've been the Rhinestone Cowboy for so long I can't remember, and I can do you every song Hank Williams ever wrote. And I can sing all them songs about Texas. And I still do all the sad ones that I know. I can't help it, I look like Merle Haggard, and I sound a lot like David Allen Coe. But the country DJs all think I'm an outlaw, and they'd never come to see me in this dive where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive. The loudmouth in the corner's getting to me, talking about my earrings and my hair.
I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh. I went to sleep in Detroit City, and I dreamed about those cotton fields and home. I dreamed about my mother, dear old papa, sister and brother. I dreamed about that girl who's been waiting for so long. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, how I wanna go home. Home folks think I'm big in Detroit City. From the letters that I write, they think I'm fine. But by day I make the cards, by night I make the bars. If only they could read between the lines. 'Cause you know, I rode a freight train north to Detroit City, and after all these years, I find I've just been wasting my time. So I just think I'll take my foolish pride and put it on a southbound freight and ride. Go on back to the loved ones, the ones that I left waiting so far behind. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, how I wanna go home.
the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Like a band of gypsies we go down the highway. We're the best of friends, insisting that the world...
WRCT, Pittsburgh.
And our way is on the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends.
Her since she up and walked away, and I'll bet you dread to spend another lonely night with me. But lonely walls, I'll keep you company. Hello, Wendell. Well, I see that you're still here. Aren't you lonely? Since our darling disappeared. Well, look here, is that a teardrop in the corner of your pain? Now don't you try to tell me that it's rain. She went away and left us all alone the way she planned. Guess we'll have to learn to get along without her if we can. Hello, ceiling. I'm gonna stare at you a while. You know I can't sleep. So won't you bear with me a while? We must all stick together, or else I'll lose my mind. I've got a feeling she'll be gone alone.
You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Everybody ready?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I am Mando Richard, and it's time for episode 2232 of Whiskey Before Breakfast and the Tuesday Ruse program on WVUD. And we're going to have a great show, whether you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, WVUD, Newark, Delaware, WTC, and WTC HD1 Chattanooga, Tennessee, WKYWLP Kaiser, West Virginia, or Tube City Online Radio from McKeesport, Pennsylvania. Let's go ahead and get things started. Here comes Joel Mabus with The Drunken Hiccups.
I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a long ways from home. And if you can't square that, just leave me alone. I eat when I'm hungry and I drink when I'm dry. Bad liquor don't get me, I live till I die. Rye whiskey, whiskey, it's whiskey I cry. If I don't get my whiskey, I'll stove up and die. Jack of Diamonds, I know you, Old Knave. You robbed me of silver and all that I crave. Well, my horses ain't hungry, they won't eat your hay. So I'll pocket my bottle and be on my way. Rye whiskey, whiskey, it's whiskey I cry. If I don't get my whiskey, gonna curl up and die. If the river was whiskey and I was a duck, well, I'd swoop to the bottom and never come up. But that river ain't whiskey and I ain't no duck. So I'll pick on my banjo and trust to my luck. Rye whiskey, it's a whiskey that is my design. If it weren't for these hiccups, I'd be doing just fine. Them preachers don't like me, they say I'm no good. They'd send me to Hades for a tug on a jug. But that devil won't catch me, and I tell you what, I'll wrestle that rascal, put his tail in a knot. Rye whiskey, it's whiskey, it's whiskey I cry. If I felt any better, I'd sprout wings and fly. Rye whiskey, it's a whiskey, it's a whiskey I cry. If I don't get my whiskey, it's farewell, goodbye.